things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi!
Hi!
We're so sorry to interrupt. We'll get you right to the episode in a sec.
And we're very sorry for keeping secrets.
But the secret is out.
It's here. We are so excited to announce the Grim Line with BFF Candle Co.
BFF Candle Co. is ran by Chelsea and Alyssa, who are BFFs, who decided to start their candle business so they could spend more time together.
Just like us.
Just like us. We did that.
They are so cool and fun to be around. And Jenny and I are huge fans of them and their candles.
So if you're wondering what the Grim Line is, it is a coordinating candle set hand-picked by Taylor and I and made with love by BFF Candle Co.
We spent the day scheming and plotting and smelling and finally decided on a line that really reflected us.
We wanted, like, warm and unexpected fall scents that we hope everybody will love.
I picked out Cozy Sweater.
I picked Cashmere Woods.
We wanted something autumnal, but not limited to the season and unisex.
Something that, you know, hopefully everybody
would like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We wanted this to, like, really benefit something. So something that is really near and dear to all of our hearts is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Portion of all the sales will go directly to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They have received over 20 million calls since 2005.
That is crazy.
I know.
Their work is so near and dear to our hearts and so important.
Yeah.
And I think we just really wanted that to be the focus. In September is National Suicide Prevention Month. So
we're launching in September.
There we go.
And you can buy the set, you can buy both, or you can just buy one. Either way, a portion of the sales go directly to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
So you can go check it out on our website, alittlebitgrim.com, and follow our links.
Or you can go to their website, bffcandleco.com. Also, make sure to follow their socials, which are tagged in the show notes, and follow ours too, if you aren't already.
All right, on to the episode. Goodbye!
Bye!
Oh, you get your shit figured out.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good.
I was at a team meeting this week, and I apparently make noises all the time when I move around. Because I was, like, getting situated at the conference table with all of my business professional peers.
Sure.
And our VP of operations looks at me and goes, "You good?
Are you done?"
And I was like, "Yeah, why?" And he's like, "There's just a lot of sound effects." Oh, so.
Why is he bullying you?
That's just Mike.
Okay.
He just bullies me.
That's what I imagine about a gentleman named Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they bully you. I don't always feel like it's lighthearted, but I feel like they're bullies.
I feel like Mike, for the most part, it is lighthearted, which is good. He's a total wuss. And
is he?
Yeah. He hates scary things. So he will never listen to the podcast. But my team at work, we're all very much into spooky horror.
I love.
All of us have, like, favorite horror movies. We talk about serial killers. Like, they are our people. And
my dream corporate audience.
Yeah. Absolutely. So for me to find this, like, very specific pocket of people that likes scary stuff is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So we decided to go to a place called the Haunted House Restaurant
in
Cleveland. And you might have seen it, like, shared on Facebook. It's gotten a lot of traction social media wise. Good concept.
Yeah. Iffy on the execution.
Yeah. Just kind of not all there.
What's happening?
It felt very much like six people sat in a room together and were like, "We like spooky stuff. Let's open a restaurant.
That's spooky.
That's spooky. And also, but movies."
Okay.
And
you need to narrow down the...
No, they didn't. They just kept it real wide.
Okay. We're keeping it real wide and loose.
Yeah. Yeah. Interpret this how you will.
Okay.
It was a great time. The food was really good. It was really interesting.
Okay.
Lots of chicken and waffles on the menu.
I was thinking about chicken and waffles earlier today.
Really?
Yeah. And it's so weird that you say that, but I have so many opinions about chicken and waffles.
I also have a lot of opinions about chicken and waffles. I didn't have chicken and waffles. I got a burger.
Oh, okay.
But it was interesting, to say the least. But we invited Mike to this restaurant, and he was like, pass. I'm out.
He just straight didn't want to go?
Yeah, straight up. Was like, no thanks.
Mikes are no nonsense.
Yeah. I was like, all right.
The only Mike that I know, like, really, really well is my brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
And he is very much, like, no nonsense, straight to the point. But he's, like, a funny guy.
Uh-huh.
They like golf and beer, and I feel like that's Mike's.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So.
Playing the name game. We gotta quit doing this.
I like the name game.
I do, too.
There's the girl on TikTok that draws a lot. Aubrey draws, I think.
Yeah.
And I sent you her thing where she, like, I think it was a mic.
Was it?
I think it was. Where she drew her imagination of what a mic was. And I was like, well, she's doing the thing that we do. Just like socks all the way up the shin.
Yeah.
Grass stains on the shoes.
Yeah. Mowing the lawn. Doing dad stuff.
Just solid dad stuff.
Just daddy things.
All the time.
Just daddy things.
Just daddy things. Oh my God.
Ew, that made me nauseous to say.
Did it?
Yeah. I feel like Michaels are a totally different breed, though.
Absolutely.
Like, you have Mikes, and they're, like, your generic white guy.
Uh-huh.
And then you have Michaels. I feel like they have, like, an air of mystery
about
them. But it's purposeful. And they're all just Mikes.
I've only known one Michael.
Okay.
In my life.
And?
We went to high school together, and he gave me...
What's up, Michael?
Hey! He was very no-nonsense, very to the point.
Mm-hmm. Was he, like, quiet, reserved, keep to himself?
Yeah,
I could see that from a Michael. Somebody who has no time to play with Mike.
Right.
If you're gonna say my name, say the full thing.
Absolutely. It's two syllables,
please. He likes to put on airs, the Michael.
Michael.
Anyway, hi.
Hi. How's it going?
You know what? It's going so good. Taylor and I just went on like a little nature stroll and we saw so many bumblebees.
Oh, it was cute.
It was cute. I found a cicada.
Yes. Yeah, you did. Mm-hmm. Carried him back to my house with you.
Yep. And I left him in the mulch bed till I get done, where I will take him home and glue him on a stick. He's dead.
He's found a new home.
He's not an alive cicada.
No. He kicked the bucket.
You've really hit in the sheets with Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Dead as a doornail.
Dead as a... He's toast. He's done. He's a goner.
Oh, my gosh. So, how was your week?
You know what? It was good. We had a good week. It's very no-nonsense, productive.
Mike would have enjoyed himself.
It's a good Mike. I had a real Mike week.
Good.
That feels so gross. Edit that out.
All right.
No, but it was good. You know, just busy. Yeah. But busy isn't bad.
No, busy is not bad. And
busy's good. How was your week? Do any traveling?
Yeah, I went to Cleveland. That was pretty much it. We had an employee appreciation event at the corporate office, and my friend Ray got to play in his band.
Oh, I saw his photos online.
Yeah, they rented a ginormous stage. And it started pouring literally as soon as they started.
Oh my gosh. What day was this? Friday?
Thursday. Okay. And we all like were looking at our weather and we're like, it is the tiniest little thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Gonna be here and gone. So we all just waited it out in the pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
Except it never let up. It just poured for like 30 minutes. Every single inch of my body was soaked in rain. I had mascara running down my face. I mean, it was tragic. I looked like a drowned rat.
I love it.
And then there was a lightning strike, so they had to like call it and get everybody off the stage and everything. And
it's funny that you say that. I guess I lied. My week did have a little bit of nonsense.
Oh.
Ian and I had big feelings on Friday morning.
Okay.
The big bad sads came. And so Ian tried to make me feel better and he bought tickets to the Zac Brown Band concert.
Oh, fun.
That was in Indy on Friday. And so we go down there and we're sitting there and the tickets won't load on his phone. And it's like, please contact the seller. But it's like 7 at night. So he bought another set of tickets.
Oh, my God.
They didn't get sent to his phone. So we're sitting just in the parking lot with the windows down, like listening to the concert.
Oh my gosh.
And so then as soon as it was like literally an hour later, it was like 8, that the tickets finally loaded on his phone. And then it started pouring and they evacuated the music center.
What a time.
Oh my God. And yeah, so we just, we're like, we're going to go home. We're going to go home.
Oh my God.
But you know what? I'm grateful that because we still had like a great,
good time.
Oh my God, so much fun.
Hanging out.
Sat in the car, or in the car, sat in the truck and like, whatever. It was fun.
That sounds like a good, I mean, probably a better time to be in
the concert.
In the concert, but at least you made the most of it.
We did. It was really fun.
Oh my gosh. Anyway. I'm sorry you had the sads.
That's okay. I'm sorry Ray's concert got rained out.
Yeah, that's all right.
Shit happens.
Yeah, shit happens.
Weather's been a little woohoo lately.
Yeah, little.
There's a giant hurricane hitting. Are you guys okay? By the time this is out, we'll know. But
yeah. This is September 10th?
Why are you looking at me like I have answers?
I don't know. I think this is September 10th coming out.
I don't know. So, but sending, you know.
Yeah.
Good vibes.
Good vibes. Hope y'all are all right.
We will see what. Well, you know what? That's a good segue.
Is it?
Into today. Yeah, even though we, listen, we know it's a little bit conspiracies today, but my story kind of bridges the gap.
Does it?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Are you going first today?
I think so.
Okay.
Cool. Am I?
I don't know.
Are you?
Uh-huh.
Well, one of us has to.
Folklore was last week.
Are you guys?
I went first in folklore time, so it's your turn.
Okay.
God. They don't care.
Do you guys, let us know if you care who goes first. This really stresses me out. So if like, if you could send me an email so I could just take it off my plate so I don't have to worry about it.
I'm telling you right now, nobody cares.
But what if they do? Why am I acting like I give a fuck? Sorry.
I mean, we're still going to have this conversation at the beginning of every episode, deciding on who should go first anyway, unless we want to flip a coin every single week.
It's exhausting. And I don't carry change.
I don't carry change.
All right. So, welcome to another installment of I Can't Follow a Writing Prompt.
Oh, I'm Taylor. That's Jenny.
Oh, hey.
Hey, sorry. We forget to introduce
this is a
ourselves.
Little bit grim. It's a podcast you're listening to.
Ding dongs. We're such idiots.
We're bad at this. We're so bad at it. Fucking amateur hour over.
I know. We just assume everybody knows.
This is like
they don't.
No. Imagine this was your first episode.
Oh. Please keep start again somewhere else.
Try again. Okay. Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to tell you about a conspiracy, but it's not really a conspiracy, but it kind of is.
All right.
It is not the aliens or like government cover-ups or like wormholes today. This is more of like a doomsday prepper type of deal. So my sources are an AP news article by Andrew Selsky, earthquakescanada.nrcanada.ca, and the usgs.gov.
Ooh, shit.
We love .gov. Sources in a conspiracy.
We do.
It just feels like it adds fuel to the fire.
Yes, it does.
Okay. It's actually probably might be more of like a disasters episode, and I really went back and forth on myself.
Okay.
Anyway.
Just pick a bucket, any bucket.
I'm covering a disaster, but it's a conspiracy because it hasn't happened yet.
I think that's a conspiracy.
Okay, I think so too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the validation. I needed that.
I got you.
Trust me when I say that you are going to want to have a plan.
Oh, God.
And you're going to want to take cover because the big one is coming.
Oh, no.
Insert like a crack of thunder.
Okay.
I purposely did that to like create a sense of dread for dramatic flair. But genuinely, this one is coming.
My anxiety is already so high.
Yeah. Warning systems have already been in place in California for ages, while Oregon and Washington just added their warning systems this year, 2021. The Shake Alert system is operated by the U.S. Geological Survey and uses seismographic sensors to detect significant earthquakes quickly so alerts reach smartphones and people can seek cover hopefully before the shaking starts. Gabriel Lotto, who is a Shake Alert User Engagement Facilitator for the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network.
Huh.
What an interesting job.
Yeah.
Says it's very important that all three states are partners because earthquakes don't respect geographic boundaries. Facts. There are huge population centers all over the West Coast where earthquake risk is the highest in the contiguous U.S. We start talking about earthquakes and the West Coast, and all people think of is like the San Andreas Fault or the 1906 San Francisco earthquake that killed over 700 people. That earthquake was a 7.9 magnitude. The San Andreas Fault is a strike slip plate boundary, meaning two plates go, oop, gonna squeeze right past you. And as they like squeeze right past you, the ground shakes a little bit.
Okay.
And it does it frequently with multiple earthquakes happening every year. But we're not talking about the San Andreas Fault. And we're not talking about a 7.9 magnitude earthquake. We're talking about a record-shattering quake from the Cascadia subduction zone.
Where is that?
I'll tell you.
All right.
I'll tell you.
Can't wait.
Does that sound familiar, though? Subduction sound? Does that sound familiar to you at all?
I learned about that in like eighth grade geology or something.
It's a different type of plate boundary where two plates lie with one like just on top of the other.
Right. And one like goes underneath. Right.
Yes. Okay. The pressure from the plates build up and every couple of hundred years, the pressure explodes. And I know what you're thinking. If we have lots of little earthquakes, will they relieve the stress building up for the megathrust earthquake? No. No, we won't.
Oh.
It takes many, many small earthquakes to release the amount of energy equivalent to a large earthquake. The amount of energy released increases about 40 times every time there is an increase of one unit on the magnitude scale. Though, so if you consider a small earthquake at like that's high enough for us to feel about a magnitude 2, there would have to be as many as 1 million small earthquakes a day.
Huh. Okay.
To match the same energy of what the mega thrust quake will be.
The mega thrust 2000.
Mega thrust 3000.
Oh,
coming at you.
No. Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. That level of earthquake activity is not observed anywhere.
Okay.
I've talked about a subduction fault before.
Okay.
In episode 37, It's Science, Run, when I covered the Indian Ocean tsunami.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. The earthquake that caused it was a 9.1 megathrust earthquake, and that occurs in the subduction zone, but the epicenter of that earthquake was in the middle of the ocean. There was no buildings or people or trains or cars or electrical grids or plumbing, but there will be when the big one comes.
Oh.
Boom, crash.
Oh, no. This is not good.
So you see, the Cascadia subduction zone has the Juan de Fuca plate subducting beneath the North American plate. The two plates are continually moving towards one another, just waiting for the perfect opportunity to have a megaquake. So if you take your hands and you hold them palms down with your middle fingers.
Taylor.
Yes.
Will you take that out?
Probably not.
Please.
I'm so stupid.
No, you're not. Don't say that about my best friend.
Anyway, if you take your hands and you hold them face down and you place like your two fingertips on top of each other,
uh-huh,
those are what the plates are doing. So, yep, they sit just like that. And one is slowly sliding underneath the other.
Ooh.
And there's all this pressure that they're putting on them. Whatever.
I don't like that the earth moves that way.
I don't understand how I am not perpetually motion sick. Spinning in a world, flinging through the sun, standing on like wibbly wobbly, essentially pool floaties that float that float on magma.
That's a great question.
How I'm never going to question when I'm nauseous again. Like, I'm just because of the world.
I might be able to actually answer this in my conspiracy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see if I can connect the dots very loosey-goosey.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We'll see.
Stay tuned. So the two plates are stuck wedged tight against the surface of the other plate. We have only ever seen a subduction megathrust quake happen in a populated area one time ever. It was in Chile in 1960. Experts say the quake was between a 9.4 to a 9.6.
Ooh.
1,655 people were killed. 3,000 were injured. 2 million homeless.
Oh my God.
And $550 million in damage in southern Chile. Tsunami from the earthquake caused 61 deaths, $75 million in damage in Hawaii, 138 deaths, and $50 million in Japan, and 32 dead and missing in the Philippines.
Holy God. That's so many people and so much damage.
Yes. The quake only lasted 10 minutes.
Wow.
I know. So the 1,000 miles of fault line that the earthquake occurred in is not highly populated. It's in the mountains in Chile. But the Cascadia subduction zone is. It's located mostly offshore, west of Vancouver Island in Oregon, although it does extend some distance beneath the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. Now, I love demographics, and I know that you do too.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 8% of our U.S. listeners are in California. Of our California listeners, 30% are in San Jose, San Diego, Los Angeles, Moreno Valley, San Francisco. And all of you, for the first time, will probably survive.
Wow.
If you are in Southern California,
uh-huh,
you will probably make it.
All right. Hi, everybody. Hope you're good.
We also have Oregon listeners.
Uh-huh.
45% of those are in Portland, with others in Boardman, Eugene, Albany, Medford, Pendleton, Salem, the capital, what up?
Uh-huh.
Beaverton.
Oh.
Isn't that a cute little town?
Fun.
I know. We also have 4% of our U.S. listeners in Washington, Seattle, Tacoma, Federal Way, Auburn, Kent, Spokane, Kirkland, and a handful of others. And 2% of our listeners are in Canada. And of those, 19% of our friends are in British Columbia.
Okay.
Did you hear your town? You're probably not going to make it.
Oh my God. Bye.
Look, you're done. Dunzo, Washington.
Please know that we love you.
Love you. Your buckets are about to get kicked.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Dead as a doornail.
Dead as a heck and dang old doornail. Sorry, it's not funny.
We laugh when we're nervous.
I know. Honestly, nervous laughter, dark humor.
That's what we're riding on here.
Here's a scary stat. There is a 34% chance this quake will happen in the next 10 years.
A 34% chance?
Now, I know what you're thinking. 34%, like, it's not so bad. Like, it's on the low side.
Yeah.
But if you think about that as, like, a 1 in 3 chance that an earthquake that could devastate entire populations on the West Coast.
That's a lot.
It's a little bad. The fault has a history of shaking things up about every 500 years or so. But that is an average and not, like, a mean. So mm-hmm. It's a little unpredictable. It's had earthquakes as close as 200 years apart. It has gone as long as 700 years without a quake.
Mm.
And the last quake was in 1700. So 321 years ago. Mm-hmm. No need to fear, though.
Oh, really?
Yes. I've compiled a list of ways and tools you may need to help you survive.
Great.
Uh-huh. A lot of your survival depends on your location.
Okay.
So I'm not saying move.
So get out now.
So get out, but maybe get out. The megathrust earthquake will be about 150 kilometers from Vancouver, and the damage pattern would be very different. We can get a good example of the kinds of damage Vancouver can expect to experience if we look at what happened in Anchorage, Alaska, during the 1964 magnitude 9.2 earthquake. Anchorage is about the same distance from the Alaska subduction fault as Vancouver is from the Cascadia subduction zone. So small buildings generally had little to no damage, unless they were affected by the huge giant landslides.
Oh.
That happened. Almost all the damage involved large buildings or large structures, such as bridges. Just for fun, let's say you're in Portland. You are not going to fare as well as Vancouver.
Okay.
Sorry. Total power failure across the grid, impassable due to extensive damage, no water, no food. It is expected, because they assessed the infrastructure of the city with this threat.
Oh, okay.
And it is expected that at most two of their major bridges will not instantly collapse. So there are two bridges that, like, connect east and west.
Okay.
Portland. All of the other bridges are, there's absolutely no way they would survive.
Minimalizing the transportation options.
You're going to be cut off. You're not going to be able to get supplies, medical care, any type of assistance. But let's not forget what goes hand in hand with earthquakes, which is tsunamis. A tsunami generated at the same magnitude as the last megathrust earthquake to happen in Cascadia is what we really need to be concerned about. That was only a 9.2, just a hair stronger than the Indian tsunami earthquake. The initial wave of death and devastation will be short-lived as the tsunami will reach the Oregon coast within 15 minutes of the initial onset of the quake.
Oh my god, you're not going to have very much time at all.
No. If you thought you were in a pickle before your house collapsed, hold on to your butt, because the initial wave will wipe out everyone and everything in its path, and any structure left standing will be gone in seconds. There is no high ground to find. The trees have fallen. The high-rise buildings have crumbled.
Just, it's over. It's over.
It's over.
Doomsday.
Survivors will be hard to come by, but there will be some. They will struggle to find drinking water, food, clothing. They will suffer from hypothermia, waterborne illnesses, and isolation. No one is coming for them because generally most of the people surrounding them also did not survive, and it's going to take a lot of logistics for us to get help out to them.
Right.
Have an emergency kit in your car. Have an emergency kit in your house. Get a bug out bag. Invest in portable and long-lasting drinking purification devices. Have drills with your family. Have an evacuation plan. And be safe, because the big one is coming.
That's terrifying. Oh my god.
Is that awful?
That's terrible.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Jeez. Well, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Now I'm full of just warm, fuzzy anxiety.
Listen, I probably should have... That can, like... But I'm so tongue-tied. Like, projected disasters can be so triggering for, like, some people's... Like, anxiety. It's, like, apocalyptic phobia or whatever. So, should have said that at the beginning, but it's too late now.
Yeah.
Hope you're okay.
Yeah. Everybody take a deep breath.
It's going to be all right.
Meh.
All right. It wouldn't be as bad as if Yellowstone exploded.
Yeah, that would be bad.
That would be bad.
All right. So, even though you just got done telling me what's under the Earth's surface, I have a... opposing viewpoint for you.
What's above the Earth's surface?
I see your subtonic plates or whatever, and I raise you one Earth is hollow conspiracy theory.
Taylor, disregard everything I said.
Earth is hollow.
Here's your savior.
Yes.
The Earth is hollow.
Yeah, nothing's gonna happen because the Earth is hollow inside.
Nothing is under there.
Right.
Oh, I love it.
So...
We should have planned this.
We should have. It's a good thing it worked out this way.
I know. I love it. Okay, tell me all about it.
Okay, so my sources are an article by RJ Wilson from urbo.com, an article from hypedepot.co, an Atlas Obscura article by Eric Grundasser, and BuzzFeed Unsolved.
I love BuzzFeed Unsolved.
All right, so let's suspend our belief in all things rational for a little while, shall we?
It's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. I'd like to throw it back to tie in our very first conspiracy theory episode where Jenny talks about the lizard people.
Ah, yes.
Which we'll tie in again here in a minute.
Yes!
Just because there are a group of people out there who believe that the Earth is hollow does not mean that they believe that it is entirely empty. In fact, the hollow Earth theorists... are divided on what could actually be inside our Earth. Some people believe it is a vast network of caves, and others believe that there is an entire civilization of people living in the core of Earth.
I wish.
There are even theorists out there who believe the civilization inside Earth is ruled by the lizard people. Some believe that aliens and UFOs don't come from outer space, but in fact were sent here by the advanced civilization that lives underneath the Earth's surface. So little green men do not fall from the sky. They come from below.
I love that idea. They're like ants.
Yeah. The hollow Earth theory dates back to ancient times where it was part of mythology and legends. And once again, we get to talk about caves. The fact that we have so many friggin' unexplored cave systems, it's no surprise that people have their own ideas about what happens in caves. Nothing good. That's what. Nothing good happens in caves.
Stay out of them.
Right. Ancient Greeks said that caves were actually entrances to the underworld. Many other legends mentioned portals to inner Earth and heroes living under the Earth's surface. Even in Christianity, hell is below the Earth's surface.
Mm.
It was suggested as a real theory in the 17th century by Edmund Halley, the namesake for Halley's Comet.
In 1692, good old Edmund was looking at his compass and trying to decipher some strange readings, and he thought the only logical explanation for these readings was that the Earth must be hollow. He even designed a model of the hollow Earth and published a paper defending his proposition. However, the theory was rejected by the scientific community, but that never stopped anyone from believing something crazy, did it? People all over the place accepted this idea that the Earth must be hollow.
Oh, for fluff's sake.
Haley believed that there are two inner shells and a core inside, and those all rotated at different speeds and directions. So like
a centrifuge.
Yeah. Some others took his idea and raised that bar again and said that there were no shells or a core, but rather a vast subterranean universe filled with strange mythical creatures, diverse wildlife, and a whole other civilization, most likely more advanced than our own.
Hmm.
Inside the Earth is another moon, a sun, and life thrives there. And I just go back to all of the, like, Marvel movies I've ever seen where they go to, like, another planet or something. That's yeah. what I'm picturing here.
I'm just like, well, why are we slumming it out here on the crust?
We can't find the entryway.
Oh. That's why.
The people who live inside the Earth are descendants of ancient people. Some believe that they could be the Lemurians or the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Some believe the inner Earth is where the lizard people live and rule. And anyone who lives underneath the Earth's surface, their lifespan is greater than ours because they don't have to deal with global warming, pandemics, or anything like that.
Sun damage.
Or... Yeah. The perfect climate allows for all living things to grow much larger and healthier than here on the Earth's surface.
I feel like they're just showing off.
Right. In 1818, John Cleves Sims Jr. published his Circular No. 1 pamphlet in which he said, "I declare the Earth is hollow and habitable within, containing a number of solid concentric spheres, one within the other, and that is open at the poles." Sims became one of the most famous and successful proponents of the hollow Earth theory. His initial vision of the Earth's interior was like a simplified version of Halley's multi-layered model, with the exception that Sims' vision included huge holes at the north and south poles, which allowed access to the hidden world inside. These holes, his unique addition to the hollow Earth theory, would become known as Sims' holes.
I'm sorry, I gotta be 12 about that.
I know, it's fine. Mr. Sims even had a monument in Ohio, inside a park called Ludlow Park.
What? That's weird.
Yeah.
Do people know that's your maiden name?
Oh, I was gonna throw it in, okay. Like, which I just thought was wild. And it's in Hamilton, Ohio, which is where my friend Kelly lives.
Weird.
Yeah, so I texted her and I was like, can you confirm or deny the existence of both of these things, like Ludlow Park and this Sims yeah. monument? Yeah. And she was like, yep, both are there. And I was like, oh, cool.
Wild.
Yeah.
Conspiracy confirmed.
Yes. Check. Sims also pushed for an expedition to the North Pole, saying that surely there they'd be able to gain access to the New World and there would be plenty of vegetation and animals and probably other men there too. Sims was eventually able to convince enough people of the possibility of his hollow Earth that in 1822, he and his supporters actually got Congress to vote on funding the expedition.
No shit.
Yes. The grant was shot down, but Sims' belief in the inner Earth never died. He continued to campaign for the theory until his death in 1849.
Died doing what he loved.
Yes. There have been many more proposed entrances to the inner Earth, including Paris, France, Staffordshire, England, Montreal, Canada, Hangzhou, China, and the Amazon rainforest.
Huh.
Hmm. Still nobody's been able to find it, but...
Why don't we think it's Mariana's Trench? Why don't we think that?
I don't know.
Well, I think that.
I mean, could be.
It's so deep.
Yeah.
It's got to be like a tunnel to something.
I don't know. You're going to have to talk to my next dude here.
Okay.
Just another small aside. In true conspiracy theory fashion, of course, we had to get back around to Hitler and the Nazis.
The love of Peter and Paul.
There is a belief that Hitler did not die during World War II, but actually found a way to escape into Inner Earth with a group of Nazis and is now living there.
Great.
Yeah. Rodney Clough is the author of World Top Secret, Our Earth is Hollow, which was published in 2014.
What? So recent.
Recent! He says, my conception of the hollow earth, based on my research, is that the shell of the earth is about 800 miles thick from the outside of the inner surface. Suspended in the center of that hollow is an interior sun that is divided by day and night sides. The other part of the hollow earth theory is that near the north and south pole are substantial openings that lead to the interior. Clough believes this so much that he moved his wife and 5 kids from New Mexico to Alaska, believing that they would be closer to the entrance of inner earth. Clough actually found a small group of people who also believed that they could find the entrance to inner earth, and they started on a trek. Eventually, they came upon a sign that said, this is a private road. Do not go any further. And so they gave up and went home.
That easily deterred, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. We're really not a steadfast bunch.
No.
They're like, well.
No. In 2003, Clough tried his expedition again, and he received an email from a man named Steve Curry, who also wanted to go to the North Pole. Steve Curry owned a, like, an expedition company.
Oh.
Which is wild, because, like, now that I'm doing so much travel agent stuff, like, I'm looking at a lot of, like, expeditions and, like, adventures like this, and I'm like, oh, shit, like, this is something that I would book for somebody, like, a trek to Alaska. But Steve Curry was like, no, I want to go to the North Pole.
I would like to go to Patagonia. Can you make that happen for me?
I sure can.
Thanks.
Okay. So the plan was that in June to July of 2007, this group of comrades would charter a Russian icebreaker ship to get to the North Pole. And this is my favorite part of research. I found the website.
Oh my gosh.
With the whole itinerary. It was like my travel agent heart and my podcast heart all came together as one in this wild 23-day trip.
Jesus. Are you going to take us through it?
Yes, I am.
Yes.
Day one, depart from Moscow, Russia. You will need to arrange your own airfare to Moscow. Day two, arrive in Moscow. You will be staying at the Hotel Russia, located at St. Basil's Cathedral. Spend the rest of the day sightseeing in Moscow.
Fun.
Day three, finish your sightseeing in Moscow in the morning. You will take an afternoon flight to Murmansk, Russia, where we will board the Russian icebreaker Yamal. Days 4 through 7, enjoy yourself en route to the North Pole on the Yamal. Day 8, spend the day at the North Pole and even call home to talk to a family or friends.
I'm sorry, you can get from Russia to North Pole in one day?
That was day 4 through 7.
Oh, on the boat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Days 9 through 11, start the search for the North Polar opening to the inner continent.
Oh, God.
Days 12 through 14, once found, travel up the Hiddekel River to city of Yahoo. Don't know.
Okay.
Don't know. That's what they've named it.
Okay.
Days 15 through 16, take a monorail trip to the city of Eden to visit the palace of the king of the inner world.
No. How? What?
I'm not gay.
Do they have a pamphlet from the inner world?
You would think that they do.
How do they name these places?
I don't know.
How do you know they have a monorail?
How do they know they have a king?
How do they...
I don't know.
How do they know it's in Eden?
Listen, wild guesses.
This is a presumptuous itinerary.
Yes. Days 17 through 18. Return trip back to city of Yahoo on the monorail. We will then continue our journey through the North Polar opening on board the Yamal for the return trip home. Days 19 through 23, enjoy the trip back to Murmansk. And then day 24, catch a flight from Murmansk to Moscow. You can then catch your connecting flight back to your hometown. Asterisks. Please note that if we are unable to find the polar opening, we will be returning via the New Siberian Islands to visit skeleton remains of exotic animals thought to originate from inner Earth.
Okay, so you're going to go look at fossils.
Yeah.
Is what you're going to do.
Uh-huh.
This is an expedition for fossils.
Uh-huh.
Love it. Okay.
I can't. One of the most popular pieces of evidence for Hollow Earth is supposed secret journal entry by Admiral Richard Richard Byrd, who claimed to be the first person to fly over the North and South Pole. According to believers, Byrd's secret journal from 1947 included a report flying into one of the Sims' holes and making contact with the race that lives inside the Earth.
The race inside Sims' holes.
Yes. Clough and his comrades often took look to Byrd's writings as proof of the inner Earth world. Here is an excerpt from the VoyageHollowEarth.com website, which is the website I got the itinerary from.
Okay. I can't wait.
If we are successful in finding the polar opening, then within 1,700 miles from any farthest North Arctic land bordering the Arctic Ocean, we should reach the inner continent, just as Admiral Richard E. Byrd did on his 1947 flight beyond the pole, as described in Amerigo Giannini's 1957 book, Worlds Beyond the Poles. At that time, Gianni wrote, "This United States Navy's polar exploratory force was preparing to embark upon one of the most memorable adventures in the world history. Under the command of Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd, it was to penetrate into land extending beyond the North Pole, supposed end of the Earth. As the hour approached for the air journey into the land beyond, Admiral Byrd transmitted from the Arctic base a radio announcement of his purpose. But the announcement was so astonishing that its import was lost due to millions who avidly read it in the press headlines throughout the world. The words of the message were momentous. I'd like to see that land beyond the pole, that area beyond the pole is the center of the great unknown." And then subsequently, the Admiral and his airplane crew accomplished a physical flight of 7 hours duration in the northerly direction beyond the North Pole. Every mile and every minute of that journey beyond was over ice, water, or land that no explorer had ever seen. As progress was made beyond the pole point, there was observed directly under the plane's course iceless land and lakes, and mountains where foliage was abundant. Moreover, a brief newspaper account of the flight held that a member of the Admiral's crew had observed a monstrous greenish-hued animal moving through the underbrush of that land beyond the pole.
What?
It is the intention of this expedition to search out and explore that area beyond the pole and the Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd discovered. It is estimated that within 1,500 miles of the pole, the expedition should reach the inner continent. The coastline of the interior continent could be followed looking for the River Hiddekel and sail up the river to the city of Jehu to meet the inner Earth inhabitants, just as Olaf Janssen and his father did in 1829.
It's giving very Land of the Lost, like, find the tachyons.
Yes. And... absolutely. If anyone is curious, this trip would have cost anywhere between $19,000 and $21,000 per person.
Holy mackerel!
Unfortunately, the trip was canceled when Stephen Curry found that he had an inoperable brain tumor and died before the trip could commence.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Clough, of course, did not give up hope, but it seems that every time he tried to get a new expedition together, something tragic would happen to an important member of the crew. Like, somebody died in a plane crash, another person died of, like, sudden cancer, somebody died in a car accident.
It's cursed!
He believes the government is attempting to keep him from this voyage.
Oh.
And that's the theory of the Earth is hollow.
I love that theory. I love it so much.
Wild.
I wish.
Right?
That there was... would you go live there?
I would go see it. I don't know if I'd go live there.
It just, like, makes me feel like, ew, I live on the crust. Like, I'm a crustling. I don't want to live on the crust. I want to live in the earth.
You don't want to be an outsider.
No. Oh, my God. Did you ever have to do that play?
Yes.
It's so terrible.
Absolutely, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So,
oh God, well, thank you for that. I love how well those two tie. So earthquakes aren't real,
right?
Because the earth is hollow.
Exactly. So you just don't even have to worry about the big one.
Look, and Taylor solved all of her problems.
Yeah, I do my best. Do my heckin' best.
Do you have a bright and shiny?
I think my bright and shiny, I kind of mentioned it earlier, was just like getting to hang out with my team at corporate, and we all that love like spooky things. So. Yeah. Just getting to talk about that and talk to people who are also interested in it is a lot of fun.
I love that. Yeah.
What about you?
Definitely when Ian and I tried to go to see Zach Brown Band.
Didn't work out.
did not work out.
That's okay.
And you know what? I saw a cloud that looked like a poodle on my way over here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so those are my bright and shinies.
We love. If you have a bright and shiny, we would love to know about it.
Have you seen a cool cloud? I would also like to know about that.
Yes.
DM me on Twitter.
Sounds great. You can also email us at alittlebitgrim@gmail.com, or you can visit the website alittlebitgrim.com. Follow us on the social medias.
Check out the candle. Follow your heart.
Be kind to yourself.
Stay out of caves. And to others.
I was like, wait, sharp left.
I'm so sorry.
We're just giving instructions.
I thought we were making a list.
Oh.
Of things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. This is stage peek. Get it out. I gotta go.
Bye.